My name's Ed and I'm an addict.
Yeah.
First thing I need to say, which is for me, I'm here today because I need help. The only thing that in my life that's even remotely been able to help me is Narcotics Anonymous. Obviously I'm nervous. It makes, for me, it just makes no sense standing up here on a Saturday morning. I'm speaking. It kind of blows my mind when I think back to when I first got clean. What it was like for me. When I was 2 years, I'm just kidding. But by the time I was 18 years old, I tried every drug I was going to try. I'd been locked up. This disease was progressive for me. I didn't get clean until I was 34. This program would have worked really well in my life at 18. In the end, I pictured myself running around Washington, D.C. I just had this picture of myself like I was like a rat running around, homeless, just waiting for someone to drop a crumb. And that's how I lived for a long time. Like any good addict, I've been locked up in and out of D.C. jail. The police people in there. They would know me and they would look at me and they go, Ed, what are you doing? What is the problem? And I always got locked up for petty stuff, but like any good act, I had been to this program. The first time I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous was in a detox center in Chantilly, Virginia. And I was kicking a heroin habit socially, and I share this just to give you an idea where my head was at in 95. There was three people bringing a meeting in, and they had a chair in the middle of the room for the addict still suffering. And about halfway, and these people are from H&R, they're talking about God and steps and, how great their life is, their family and all this good stuff, talking about God and... like I said, I was kicking a heroin habit socially. I wasn't feeling too well, and I got up and I looked each one of them in the eye, and I said, fuck you, and fuck you. And I grabbed the chair in the middle of the room, and I said, I'm taking this motherfucker with me. And I shared that was my attitude about getting clean. That was my attitude about everything. And really, I mean, later on, I found out I was just, I was scared, but... Between there and 2004, I'd been to two different treatment centers, and I heard the message of NA, mainly through H&I. And I was waking up one day in a stairwell out of DuPont Circle, and I was getting ready to walk up to the Metro to panhandle some money to go downtown and get high. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, my God, this could go on forever. I was like, this, because I was more sick than well. What was happening in my life was, it was just really horrible, but I was just like barely surviving. And I remember thinking, just maybe Narcotics Anonymous could work, man. I seen my brother get clean, and, I ran into him one time out there, and he looked different, and he told me he was going to meetings. Anyway, so I said, all right, I'm going to try the same detox again. I said, but this time, I'm going to go to this detox, and I'm going to do everything this program suggests. And one of the things in my head at the time I was saying was, I want to do everything this program suggests so I can go get high in peace, so I can say this program does not work. And for me, and that was the last time I went through that detox, and I stayed clean ever since. What I did was I got a sponsor. This guy, I heard this guy sharing at meetings, and he was very passionate about recovery. And I was thinking to myself, if anybody can get me clean, this guy can. And I had my brother drive me out to his, he owned a car dealership. I had my brother drive me out there, and I asked him, his name was Rick, he's passed away since, and I said, Rick, will you be my sponsor? And he goes, well, you know what, Ed? He goes, I know you and I know your brother. I think you're full of shit. You're not ready. He goes, well, you can call me and we'll find you a sponsor. But I knew in my heart, I was telling myself, unless this guy's talking shit, he's going to take my phone calls. And, you know, unless he was, you know, lying in these meetings that I'd heard him sharing about. Anyway, long story short, I kept calling him. And about 3 weeks into it, I said, hey, Rick, you know, how am I doing? He goes, well, you found a home group. You've been going to meetings. You got a service position. He goes, you know, you got a sponsor. And I was like, what? I was like, I got a sponsor. And, you know, right then, I remember so vividly a huge weight lifted off my shoulders. I was like, man, you know, I got someone. And to me, especially early on, man, I asked my sponsor, you know, what time do I need to go to bed? I had no clue. You know, and he said, look, man, he goes, you need to go to bed at like 10 o'clock. He goes, people who do shit in this world get up early. They're not watching reruns of MASH on TV till 2 in the morning. And you know, and that's the way this program worked for me. He told me what to do. I bucked a little bit. Like, again, I said I was going to follow every suggestion. He said, have you ever worked any steps? Because he'd seen me, and I said, no, I haven't. He goes, well, we're going to get this. There's a step working guide in Narcotics Anonymous. I want you to get this, and I want you to read the first step, and it works how and why. He goes, and then I want you to, you know, pray, invite God in, and I want you to start answering these questions in the step working guide. And I told him, I said, hold up a second, dude. I said, powerless and unmanageable, I can go right to step two. I said, let's just free. I said, the state of affairs, my life was in, you know, we don't even need to discuss it. I know I'm powerless. And he goes, you know what, man? He goes, back up a second. He goes, I want you to think about this. He goes, I want you to get a blank piece of paper. I want you to write down that piece of paper, one question. He goes, I want you to answer that question. Call me tomorrow, and we'll discuss what step you're going to start working. I said, okay, no problem. I said, what's the question? And he goes, how many times is your way of getting clean worked? Now, for me, see, I get choked up when I think about this, man. For me, I mean, luckily I had enough sense at that time to go, okay, man, what do I need to do to you know, work this first step? First step in NA has 69 questions in it. I wrote like over 70 pages, probably bored him to death. I was one of those people, I mean, in that first step, it talks about, you know, one of the questions is, what have you, you know, done that you feel guilt and shame, you know, ashamed about? And I'm thinking, that's some four-step shit. What are you kidding me? I said, you know what, fuck it. I wrote down everything. And that's how I've been able to stay clean. You know, I was one of those people sitting in detox, and you read up on the wall, you see the steps, step four and five. I was not scared at all of those steps because I wasn't doing it. There'll be no discussion about that. And there's nothing to be nervous about. I'm not doing it. What I didn't realize was you have to work a first step, a second step, and a third step. And by the time that point came, then I was ready. Once I had actually did those things and gone through it with a sponsor and learned how to live the first three steps, then this fourth step made perfect sense. And, you know, and I discussed things with that man that I don't even discuss with myself. We sat there, and this guy, like I said, he was a used car salesman, and you know, he had a, you know, and he was a little, to me, he was larger than life, right? You know, kind of like a tough guy or whatever. But you know, I remember we sat in his car, and we were going through that. He was crying, I was crying, and you know, and I got a lot of freedom from that. You know, my sponsor told me things early on. He said, look, man, I'm your sponsor. You need to go to a meeting every day. And what I'm sharing here, I mean, the topic is the common thread. And I'm going to be honest with you. I looked it up in the basic text. I don't really even know what that means. But the theme of my, you know, one of my pet peeves is I hear people say, we need to get, you know, I need to get back to the basics. And my thinking is, my sponsor never told me to leave the basics. I mean, where the hell, I mean, you know, I mean, that makes no sense to me. I'm like, get back to what, I mean, who told you to stop? You know, I mean, and for me, staying in recovery is about following direction. I mean, I've been clean now. Last February was 9 years. I call my sponsor every day. That it's not an option. It's not something I discuss with myself. Maybe I don't need, no, bullshit. I call him every day. And what I was told by Rick when I missed a day or two early on, call me up and say, look, man, if you're telling me you ain't got 5 minutes for me, you're full of shit. And he's absolutely right. There's a lot of days I didn't understand why I needed to call a sponsor every day to tell him, okay, you know, I'm going to this meeting, you know, I went to work, you know, blah, blah. I have a lot of great days in here. But I honestly don't know what's coming down the pipe. And I need to have that relationship with this man so when something happens. At 6 months clean over in PG County, a friend of mine, I was calling this dude every day. She had passed away. I was very close to her. I went to the funeral, and I walked in there. There were people, there was like five or six people coming at me going, no, 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 no. You cannot, no, get out. Get out. And I'm like thinking, this person's dead. What, I mean, you got to be kidding me. Why can't I be here? I can't do any more harm. And, I mean, like I said, I'm in PG County. I'm trying to get back to Fairfax, Virginia. I know where to cop in PG County. I got to drive right through the district. I was like crazy. But because I've been calling this guy, my knee-jerk reaction was like, you know what? I got to call him up and say, man, you won't believe this guy. You won't believe what happened. And what happened was, he didn't say anything magical, but by me taking action, I talked to him long enough to get over to Woodrow Wilson Bridge, headed to where I needed to go. And that's how things happen. You know, with my sponsor today, I have a relationship with him. We don't play catch up. I will call him and say, look, man, I think you need to know this. I don't think it's very significant, but maybe, you know what I mean? So when I call him and say, look, everything that we were talking about and I've been talking about backfired and I feel like shit and I feel like a loser once again, we're not playing catch up. We're right on point. And the new sponsor I got, who I've had now for 4 years, was one of the hardest things I had to do. Like I mentioned earlier, I had put everything in to my first sponsor. You know, you could say I put him on a pedestal or what, but I gave him all that I had. You know, that man had all my bullshit. He had more fun with my sixth step. I at one point when we were doing that, I said, man, you're enjoying this a little too much. You know, talking about the character defects. So my thinking was when it came time to find a new sponsor, I was like, you know what? I think I learned enough. This is the addict thinking in my head. I think I learned enough from this man. You know, we went through the steps. At that point, I was sponsoring people, and I'm going, I think I'm going to be all right. And then this little voice said, hey, man, he goes, what's going to be harder, building a relationship with another man again from scratch or copping dope with $8 in the freezing cold? What's going to be harder? So I got another sponsor, and I'm going to tell you, at first it was difficult, but it was just like the first one. It was like the same thing all over again, and me... The common thread is, and this is something that my sponsor says now today that sticks in my head a lot. He said, Ed, you got two choices when you wake up in the morning. He goes, either you deal with this disease or it's going to deal with you. He said, that's it. He goes, you're going to have it any way you want it, brother. He goes, but either you deal with this disease or it's going to deal with you. And the way I deal with this disease is I work a program, and what I mean by that is, I was told when I wake up in the morning, I pray. I was told right after that, I need to read the Just for Today. And they didn't say, okay, well, you know, get in the car, look at it on your iPhone. And, you know, he said, this is what you do before you get rolling. I wake up in the morning, first thought in my head is, if I could just make it back to this fucking bed, I'm going to be all right. You know, I don't want to face things. It's just the way I am. And what happens is once I pray and I let God in, who I found in the steps with the help of my sponsor and some other people, I go, okay, you know what, maybe I can face this day. You know what I mean? It really isn't that bad, is it? And then I read the Just for Today. Now, how I've developed some little tricks. The Just for Today sits on the back of the toilet. I ain't ashamed to say it. I wake up, I sit down to piss in the morning, and there it is. So some days I'm like going like this, and I'm I've done it. I was also told say the seven step of prayer in the morning. Now, I'm likely to forget that, right? And I was. My sponsor would say, "Hey, you read the seven step prayer in the morning? You say the seven step prayer in the morning?" Oh no, but I'll do it now. I'll do it now. And that went on for a while. I said, "Man, I got to get ahead of this. This man had a suggestion. I need to follow. He's not just he's not just blowing smoke. He wants me to do it for a reason. And I want the benefits that come with all the other suggestions. You know, that's why I'm like, all right, I really want, I mean, if I don't do it, I'm not going to get what happens, right? So right where I go to open the cabinet where my coffee is, there's a seven-step prayer right there. I stop every day. I'm not walking up to the kitchen thinking, okay, I'm going to be saying the seven. I don't even think about it until I see it. And I stop and say, hold on a second, man. Let's figure out where this, let's figure out where this kitchen came from. This kitchen came, everything in my life, I owe to Narcotics Anonymous. And the sad truth for me sometimes, I don't know if it's sad or not, but I don't think I would, I mean, how could I repay a program that took me from absolute fucking mess? I mean, completely devastated to become a productive member of society. Now, I was saying earlier, I bucked on a lot of suggestions. My sponsor told me for the first year, he said, look, man, you need to get a tax-paying job. And I'm thinking, well, I'm cleaning gutters for cash and power washing. Why would why would I want to pay taxes? You know what I mean? That makes no sense to me. And I didn't know, I like everything. My main problem is I always think I know what something's going to be like until I do it. I look at shit and I go, okay, yep, I know what that's going to be like, and I decide right then and there whether I'm going to do it. What the program has taught me is I can do that, but I better fucking do it. Do you know, I mean, whether I like it or not, I got to do it. So at a year clean, the sand, the dust in my head's calming down a little bit, and I'm like, all right. And I got a tax-paying job. That was another turning point in my recovery. The truth was, I didn't want a tax-paying job. Not that I cared about paying taxes. I was scared I couldn't be employable. I still, at that point, at a year clean, didn't know if I could get up and go to work every day. At 35 or 30, however old I was, I didn't know. God put someone in my life who was in the program. He hired me, put me through school. And when it came time to work, I didn't have a license. Took over 2 years to get that back, clean up that mess. This man came, the owner of the company came and picked me up and brought me to work every day. One of the things that I'm passionate about is when I put my recovery first, all the crap in my life works out. If I want to know where my disease lies, all I got to do is ask myself, what am I not talking about? That's all I need to do. What is Ed keeping on the back burner? I now have a 7-year-old son, and something told me in my head, you don't need to invite the people in the program to help you raise this kid. This is my boy. You know what I mean? This is mine. I'm going to tell him. Well, let me tell you what my way got. A little kid pushed him down the playground, had him crying, bruised him up a little bit. And he comes to me and he's telling me this and he's all upset. And I said, look, man, come here. I said, next time you see that kid and he pushes you or touches you, punch him as hard as you can in the throat. I told my sponsor that later after the fact. And he said, are you kidding me? That's what you said? And I said, yeah, don't you think that's good advice? I said, I bet that kid will not touch him again. And he said, Ed, do you know what the answer is there? And I said, I just thought I told you, but go ahead. He said, you need to tell him to go find an adult and tell him what's going on. You know, and that's the kind of advice I give to a 5-year-old kid. I need this program has to be in my life. Wherever I don't want it to be, one of the things, I got 5 minutes. One of the things that have stuck with me and continues to stick with me is I was whining and complaining to my sponsor, and he goes, man, you don't sound grateful. And I said, well, no shit, right? He goes, you need to write a gratitude list. And I go, all right, I haven't done one of them. I'm like, you know, what do you need to do? And he explains that you need to write the things you're grateful for. Well, you know, we can talk about it. We can add to it. We can whatever. I said, okay, man. And I hang up the phone, and I'm getting ready to do it or whatever, and I'm thinking about it. And phone rings. 5 minutes go by, phone rings. He goes, Ed, if you're not grateful, you're in deep shit. And I thought about that, and I said, well, how do I know if I'm grateful? He goes, you don't need to ask people what they're grateful for. You can tell. You're grateful for your wife, you respect her. You're grateful for your job, you show up early and are willing to stay late. That's you can tell what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. I go to meetings. I'm willing to sponsor people. I'm willing to continue working the steps. I'm willing to share what was given to me, period. You know, I'm in service. You know, I would have liked to come down here last night. Well, I chair a meeting. I chair my home group on Friday nights. It's not an option. I signed up for its commitment. That's what I'm doing. I don't debate it and think, how can I wiggle my way around it? If I don't like it, I don't take the commitment, period. But that has always stuck with me. Action is where you can tell what I'm doing, you know? And a lot of times I'm not grateful for stuff, and I got to take a look at that. And, you know, marriage is one of them where I struggle sometimes. She's not here today, but anyway, that's it. That's all my time. Thanks for letting me share.